Blog Talk Radio.
The dead of night, when thy winter wounds shall not be healed from the wind which howls about your being. In the dead of night, when your friends have gone and you sit huddled around the castle's fire. In the dead of night, when all is dark, who will you be? Tonight.
There is nothing wrong with your computer.
There is nothing wrong with your audio
or your video.
We are controlling transmission
for the next hour.
And we will control all that is here. Let me repeat, there is nothing wrong with your computer. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the all and mystery
which reaches from the inner mind into the shadows of the Night Zone.
Good evening, everybody. Glad you could join us tonight in the Night Zone. This is, of course, a live event. I'm Colin Knight. You are in the Night Zone.
Please don't say it. It's too easy to believe. I'll go crazy. You don't want that any more than me. Decide whatever. Keep it to
The following program is intended for open-minded audiences. All information provided by guests or speaker are the ideas or realities of that person or organization. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality and valued information, Night Zone or its operators do not accept any liability for guest opinions or statements made. And as a valued listener, we remind you always keep your mentor. Shadows of the Night Zone, we bring you the master of the Cobrid Bible and the understandings of the Elohim, Marshall Masters, tonight in the Night Zone. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knight.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, madame and messieurs. Welcome to
the Night Zone.
No stranger to the Night Zone, a favorite shadow, Marshall Masters, is back with us tonight, and we'll be getting into some pretty deep grooves. And we look forward to you joining us and staying with us as we bring to you Marshall Masters live
in the shadows of the Night Zone.
The phone lines are open.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. We remind all of our listeners, KVADMTOR.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madame and messieurs, boys and girls, mes enfants, gendarmes de fédéral.
Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone.
Tonight, Planet X Unplugged with Marshall Masters. In the early 1990s, the United States Naval Observatory confirmed the orbital agitation of Pluto and various planets, calculating that a tenth planet would have to be 2 to 5 times the size of Earth, and performing an elliptical orbit would extend some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto. This would be an elliptical orbit maintaining gravitational pull on our entire planetary system. So, is Planet X so far out there we can't see it? We certainly can and have measured the gravitational pull it exerts on the planetary systems, and we've known this since 1930s. Tonight, we have with us an old friend and author of Planet X Information, host of Cut to the Chase,
Marshall Masters.
Destiny comes to those who listen, and fate finds the rest. So learn what you can learn, do what you can do, and never give up hope.
Marshall Masters, next in the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
I have to tell you, Marshall and I have this little game I think we're playing at the beginning of the show
And he cuts it right to the beginning of the show. And, of course, the beads of flop sweat have already formed. Good evening, Marshall. Welcome back to the Night Zone, sir.
Oh, hey, Colin. Sorry I was cut it a little close there. But I made it. You know, I get in there.
That's what counts. That's what I knew you would, sir. I had no doubt in my mind. But, you know, the natural host flop sweat definitely begins to permeate the air. You know, it's not looking good, snapping at people and kicking things over. And, oh, well, such is life. So how have you been, sir?
I've been pretty good. We're pretty busy here. We're working on several different things. And there's a lot of information right now. There's always a lot of stuff coming in the channels. We're getting a lot of folks that are sending us cell phone photos.
Right.
And a lot of this, we published an article on the site that's addressing this. And so it's that itchiness that people have, you know, to validate, to see it. And what we try and explain to them is really not the best way to use your time. The best way to use your time is to be focused on preparation. If you're, you know, if you know it's going to be here 3 seconds before somebody else does, or 3 days, or 3 weeks, it doesn't matter. If you're not prepared in the other aspects, then you have no advantage at all. Your advantage just immediately dissipates like tears in the rain. And
well,
the important thing is to really, you know, to be aware of what's happening in the world around you and to plan.
Right. Right. So for those of you that are listening for the first time and dipping your toes into the Planet X theory, we have a planet supposedly coming into our path or crossing our path. Some say it's a dwarf star. Some say it's a cosmic family of planets and debris. What are the chances in a percentage scale that we are going to be affected by this, Marshall?
Well, I mean, from what our research is showing us is that we're already being affected. So it's not about if it's going to happen. Things are already starting to happen. The sun is being perturbed. You know, just the other day, it was reported one of the astronauts was on the International Space Station, and the last time he was in space was 12 years ago on the station. And he said that he noticed clearly that there was a difference in the amount of ice pack coverage on the North and South Poles, and that it had gone down. All right. So people are seeing changes in the world. We're seeing other things that are happening, and all of the signs are clearly telling us that there is a large perturber out there,
right.
Something that is getting the sun excited, something that's throwing comets. You know, we just had a huge impact event on Jupiter, and that event was as large as the signature of that event was as large as the Earth itself. I mean, we are talking about if a rock like that hit us, arrivederci Roma. Now, this is, consider the last time we saw something like that was Shoemaker-Levy 9.
Okay.
Now, this is twice we've had this kind of a major impact in our lifetime. Well, I mean, humanity's been watching Jupiter for an awful long time. We at least have, in recorded history, we've never noted anything like this happening before. So now here we have these two huge impact events, Shoemaker-Levy 9, and then now recently this one. And those are very recent terms. So, again, a lot of the things that are happening out there, and, you know, it's like catching the flu. And a sniffle one day turns into being bedridden the next, and the next thing you know, you're dying of pneumonia.
Right.
And if you're lucky, you don't. And if you're not lucky, you do. But it always starts with that little sniffle or the scratch at the back of the throat.
And you know, you get that scratch at the back of their throat, and you go, eh, I'll get over it.
Yeah.
Gets
raspy, and how often does that happen? And how often do you get over it? But it's that one time that you don't, and they turn around and say, I'm sorry, Mr. Smith, you have the H1N1 virus.
That's it. That's it. And, you know, that thing is really a ticking time bomb because it, you know, it just is not going away. It's persisting through months when other influenzas and flus just simply disappear. And
now,
that means it's out there and it's mutating. And so it's just a matter of time before it mutates into something dangerous.
Is this because the Earth climate is changing and allowing these germs to continue to multiply? I mean, once upon a time, you could count on winter pretty well killing anything. But we have an issue up here in Canada, which people snigger at, but it's called the pine beetle. And it's destroying thousands of hectares of forest at an alarming rate. And even when it gets to 40 below in Canada, these things don't die like most bugs do. So we have a huge problem with the pine beetles. So, yes, I could see exactly where you're going with that.
Well, with the climate change, what happens is that we are opening up Pandora's boxes. I mean, when we look at the deforestation that is happening in the Amazon, we're not only losing incredibly valuable resources, we're chopping down the lungs of the planet down there, but also you're unleashing all kinds of things just because you're tearing up the ground. And bacteria and viruses that were, you know, locked at one time now are getting free. And so a lot of this is man-made that we're creating. A lot of it is just natural. And this is the reason why we have this real difficult time of taking responsibility. You look at what's happening on the planet, and then you see that half of the people out there don't think global warming is real.
Right.
And it's just pure, you know, the pure denial. It just, you shake your head and you go, wow.
Well, I think that,
you know, I know how Noah felt.
I think the biggest problem with any of this information, such as the paranormal and the Planet X information, is that it is backed with some science that is showing some very positive results. And yet there is this need for man to deny that we are not the greatest beings in the universe. It is hard for man on Earth to accept that we may be just a very, very, very small cog in a very, very big wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Earth-centric. You know, for years, Colin, I used to say it's the sacrifice the virgin thing. And, you know, in days of old, earthquake would happen, volcano erupts, the gods are angry, and really, the event has already happened. Now everyone's just got the jitters. And so in order to get over the jitters so they can get business back to usual, quick, go grab a virgin. Sacrifice the virgin. And, you know, lo and behold, things do return to normal, except for the virgin. It's a little hard on her, not to speak, you know, and also the family.
Yeah.
But it sure works for the high priests who are controlling all the information. And
sure.
As long as we have this kind of sacrifice the virgin approach to this, we're not really going to understand what's happening to our planet. We're not going to see ourselves as part of the planet. That really is the problem. We have this ancient notion that, you know, we are the, you know, we're the baddest boys on the block. We are the gods of everything we see, and that is not the case.
We're going to head for a break here, people, just to give everybody a break and a recalibrate. But before we do, I just want to throw this into the audience for the next 2 minutes or so. You know, the Sumerians depicted a solar system of 12 members, not 9. They counted the 9 planets that we know of, plus the sun and our moon, and an additional planet called Nibiru, which meant planetary of the crossings. So, you know, when we get back, we're going to chat Marshall up some more, and we're going to get that information brought forward.
The phone lines
exactly
are open.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information. KVMTO.
A basic conclusion of my writings has been that those who gave mankind civilization were visitors to Earth from another planet. If I say extraterrestrials, it's a dirty word, but that's what they were.
You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. 2012 is speculated to be the end of the world based on the Mayan calendar and other sources. If you are worried or unsure about it, then some uncommon sense, along with a literal Bible prophecy breakthrough, may help. Find out what kind of a year 2012 will be with Tim McHyde in the Night Zone.
Into the shadows
of the Night Zone. Phone lines are now open. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
The ancient Sumerian text, just in a very broad overview, basically tell us that these Anunnaki came from space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. They began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
You are in the Night Zone on BlogTalkRadio.com. Your host, Colin Knight.
And just before we get to Nibiru and Eden, I just want to finish up with Marshall regarding Planet X. A couple of questions that have come in over the wire while we were throwing to break there.
Good.
The voice was Zachariah Sitchin that was on that sound piece, I believe.
Oh, yeah, and I recognize that. I've spoken with him personally, and so...
A lot of people wonder where these audio bites come from. I have no idea, but they arrive. So, okay, I've read somewhere that, Marshall, that we're traveling at about 60,000 miles per hour or so in space. And that's about 900,000 kilometers an hour, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Would Planet X be traveling that quickly towards us or away from us? In the scheme of things?
Well, in the scheme of things, what we really have to be concerned with is the relationship of Planet X to the sun. You know, in real estate, they say, you know, the three secrets of real estate, location, location, location. Well, it's the same thing here, okay? And what we really want to do is we want to have the interstate move two counties over. That's really what we want. We'd like to have Planet X pass through the core of our system in full opposition on the other side of the sun. But if it's on our side of the sun, now it really gets dicey.
Right. So do we know yet, and when will we know whether it is going to go in conjunction or the rest of it? I watch your videos on YouTube, by the way, so I'm an expert on conjunction and darn, I forgot the other words, but you get what I mean. It's impressive.
I know.
I enjoyed the videos. They're a little complicated, but they got the message across, definitely. So when will we know whether Planet X is A, inbound for sure, and B, what trajectory it's going to be on? How much notice will we have?
Well, in terms of where we're going to know, knowing exactly where this object is going to be at any time is very difficult. To know precisely exactly where it's going to be, when we think about an object in terms of our planet or the other planets on our solar system, we know where Earth and
Venus and Mars and Neptune where they're going to be. You know, if we didn't, the astrologers would all be out of business.
Okay.
And however, this object is not traveling like a planet. It is traveling like a comet. So if you think of us being on a racetrack, and here we are, we're going, say, left to right. And this object is going top to bottom or bottom to top. In other words, it's going in a steeply inclined orbit that brings it in below and then takes it out above, as opposed to going around and around. All of the, if you take and draw a line from the center of the sun straight out into space to the 12 signs of the constellation, and then you make a big flat thin disk, right? That's the ecliptic. That's the the plane of the solar system. Now, all of the known planets orbit within a few degrees of that. All right? This thing is way south of it. And so it's like in a comet, what's what we call a comet-like orbit. It's long period. So you have this long period objects tend to be unstable in terms of their orbits. And then now on top of that, this is inclined to the ecliptic. So being comet-like, it's impossible to say with absolute precision. When we do see it, that is either what Jacko van der Werp's forecast in our book, Planet X Forecast in 2012 Survival Guide, suggests is that we will see this either the tail end of this year or into next. And we're tending to feel it's more going to be, if Jacko's estimates and his forecast hold up, that we're looking somewhere around the middle of 2010. At that point, it's going to be undeniable. Now, that's not to say it's not already being observed. There's a lot of leak images that have been coming out for some time. So when I'm talking about an official announcement, what I'm talking about is something that would come from...
something that irrefutable.
Something irrefutable. And what we say in the book is that we believe this would be the Wormwood Observatory that's in Larmouth. That's in the, if you look on the Google Maps, you'll find it on the northwest corner of Australia. Yeah. Now, that would be the right agency to make that kind of announcement. They're independent. They specialize in infrared search for near-Earth objects. So if someone's going to find it and announce it, that's the logical candidate to bring that out. And one of the things that we do see playing through this is that it will follow, you know, whatever, you know, it's kind of, you make the prophecy come about. So if the Bible says that we're going to call it Wormwood, then you name the observatory Wormwood.
It's self-fulfilling,
Self-fulfilling, because the object will likely be named after the observatory or the individual that discovers it.
Right.
So I can see this being something being named after the observatory.
What I question is if Planet X, Nibiru, or whatever other name that has been conquered on this this rock or this item coming in, whatever it is, something is causing it to stay in its trajectory, in its orbit. So what is influencing it?
Well, it's in a long, it's in a captive orbit around our sun. And it's, you know, historically, there's a lot of evidence that talks about it. It's discussed in the Old Testament. It's, you were mentioning the work of Zachariah Sitchin. We find the most prescient ancient accounts, prescient being, you know, something that's as easy to understand as a man on the street interview, is in the Colburn Bible. That was the reason why I published the book. This is a two-part book. It's an ancient wisdom text that was kept in hiding in England by secret Scottish societies, came out in the early 90s. when prophecy mentioned in the Colburn Bible was being fulfilled. Now, it called it the destroyer. The Celts called it the frightener. There were two authors to the book. And we have these, you know, these many different names. You start looking at history, and you start looking at ancient wisdom texts, you start looking at folklore. What we know is it's a captive object. You know, that the thing that got us into this back in 99 was I got together with a group of folks, and we just said, hey, is this cool? What's with global warming? Mm-hmm. And because I had during, you know, for a period of several years through the 90s, been traveling back and forth to Russia during the winter over the poles. And I had seen a progressive deterioration over a period of 8 years of the North Pole, whereas the first time I saw it in 93, it was just pristine. It was breathtaking. It was breathtaking. And last time I saw it in 98, it looked like the busted windshield of a wrecked car. Hmm. You know, so, I mean, I'm looking at that, and these folks are telling me global warming doesn't happen. Well, I'm going to believe my lying eyes.
Right.
Global
warming is a fact. What's causing it is the argument.
What's causing it, there's two causalities. The principal causality is solar. Mm-hmm. Secondary and the real exacerbator is anthropomorphic. It is what we are doing. We are really making it worse. And we are more responsible, really, for habitat destruction than the global warming engine itself right now. We're destroying habitats faster than the sun is.
Well,
but the principal cause of these weather changes is solar, and that's what we determined. So we said, well, if it's solar, is this just something that is Earth, or if it's not, you know, we had to find out, is this solar induced or is this purely anthropomorphic?
Yeah.
We said, well, if it's solar induced, then there's going to be evidence of global warming on other planets in our solar system with atmospheres. Okay.
Reaction has an equal and opposite reaction. Universal law.
Bingo. Wow. When we started looking at that, talk about click, 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 click. Everything with atmosphere is perturbed. The climate change on Mars was so drastic. If it changed to that degree here, if it warmed that much, we would be extinct now, period, end of story. We even saw signs of surface warming, unusual surface warming on Pluto during its last swing around the sun. Now it's going out to aphelion. It's going away, and it's still the same. Its swing around the sun usually picks up a little bit of heat, but this time it was 10 times that amount. So there's all of this going on. So fine, now the sun is the principal engine, because that's what the other planets are telling us.
Right.
Next step is you have to say, is this a natural cycle of the sun, or is it a perturber?
Okay.
Now, what we're finding is what NASA's probes are telling us is that the southern hemisphere of the sun is more active right now than the northern hemisphere.
Okay.
So that if both hemispheres were equally active, then it would be something solar, purely solar. And this was, we were really looking for this. You know, the one thing about Planet X is we really don't want to be right. Okay?
Yeah.
I really would love the day to hear all my cynics saying Marshall's the stupidest guy alive. It would be honey in my ears, because this wouldn't happen. That's really what I'd like. And then I'd celebrate that with a lot of whiskey and cigars, and to hell with the cynics. I'm going to dance on the beach.
You know, 2012, we have no idea whether this will or will not happen. As you mentioned in a number of your videos, there are so many scenarios of possibility depending on the axis of this and the solar pole of that and the gravitational grip of this. You know, we've known about the gravitational pulls for some time. That's what got Apollo 14 back home. Apollo 13 back home. You know, so the understanding of the gravitational pull is there in our scientists. So it dependent on how this thing comes through our system, I guess, will determine what its end cost will be.
Yeah, and the thing here you have to keep in mind is that when these comet-like objects are approaching, coming, they are picking up speed as they do that. That's the natural tendency. They start coming in, and as they get closer to the object that holds them captive, their velocity increases. So, you know, if you were to say, well, gee, what if we found some mysterious way to connect every computer on the face of the planet, like, you know, Skynet, right? Create a Skynet. Could a Skynet figure it out? No, it couldn't, even if you had all that much computational power, because this is still an inherently unstable object. And so what we have right now is we have the sniffle before the sneeze.
Right.
You know, for a long time we've had this scratch at the back of the throat. And so, you know, there are folks out there right now that get it and they want to get through it. They've looked at it and they make the same decision that intelligence agencies make on 90% of the material they review. They go, is it actionable?
Yeah.
There are very few smoking guns in intelligence.
Can we do something about it? And if we can't do anything about it, then let's not expend any energy on it, because it's going to happen anyway.
Well, what the Colburn tells us and the ancients have told us is that they've all survived previous flybys. They're trying to get the information forward so that we can do the same.
Right.
But, and, you know, if folks are going, hey, I'm more comfortable with my head in the sand, well, that's where they'll be when the problem happens. You know, it's if you're aware of your environment, you're looking at this stuff, you're staying in tune with it, you're not deflecting it and say, you know, gee, it's like the big monster in the closet. If I don't open the closet, the monster won't come out. Right. All right?
Speaking of the monster, yes, Hans. We'll
be
right back.
Take a quick break. Recharge your glasses or any other libations you may be having tonight. This is the Night Zone, and you are in the house with Marshall Masters. You have 2 minutes.
2012 is speculated to be the end of the world based on the Mayan calendar and other sources. If you are worried or unsure about it, then some uncommon sense, along with a literal Bible prophecy breakthrough, may help. Find out what kind of a year 2012 will be with Tim McKay in the Night Zone. Watch for the listings.
Welcome to the shadows
of the Night Zone. You'll be right back with Marshall Masters and the Planet X and Nibiru right after this.
The phone lines are open.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVMTOR.
Welcome to the shadows
of the Night Zone.
We all have busy lives, and sometimes we just can't get to the computer when we want to. Sometimes programs schedule at a time and a place an event when we just can't be there. But never fear, Blog Talk Radio have figured an answer. Yep, you can go to any of your favorite radio shows on blogtalkradio.com and download their archives or their player, and voila, you have access to your favorite shows. It's as easy as that.
You're in the Night Zone with Colin Knight.
Age is a time of greater spontaneity. It's going to be a time where the era of the great faith-based religions of the Piscean Age will fade and be replaced by religions that are more scientific. Rather than to believe, the next 2,000 years is about knowing.
Check your archive listings.
And it is about knowing. I believe John Hogue hit it right on the head. I have with me tonight Marshall Masters of the Planet X. Marshall, you and I have gone around the ring on Planet X a number of times, and I think you and I are on pretty much agreement as to what the cause and effect will be, depending on how Planet X comes by us here. But there's a message coming in on how close does it have to come to affect us? How close does Planet X have to come to the Earth before we have those cataclysmic events?
Well, if it's going to be on... this is, again, getting back to location. That was the February 2008 report that we did, 2009, and where we have the 8 different locations, and you were talking about them before. If we're looking at it passing on our side of the sun, all right, all of those circumstances, it doesn't matter whether it's in front and ahead of us, or in front and behind us, or behind and behind us, and behind and ahead of us. It's going to be a painful situation if it's going to arrive on our side of the sun. On the other side of the sun, opposite side of the sun, if it is as furthest away as possible, which would be conjunction, all right? Conjunction puts us outside of our orbit and between, and the sun is between us and it. That is the best case scenario, and that is one where we're going to have a moderate level of severity, something on par perhaps with the 10 plagues of Exodus, maybe even not that bad. On the other hand, if it arrives on, it passes through the core of the system on our side of the sun,
right,
then one of those scenarios is an extinction level event. Yeah, the rest of them, depending on where it lands up, it's going to hurt. Now, what we're seeing is, you know, in all of the folklore, is this extinction level event. First off, you have people say it's going to hit the planet. No, it's not going to hit the planet. There's no historical evidence of it doing that.
Right.
But it's the big problem that we see, and this is what we write about in our book, Planet X Forecast, is the interaction with the sun, the solar violence. Now, you go out and you see this movie with Nicolas Cage, Knowing. That is an excellent example of a massive solar storm that literally takes out life on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of thing that we're seeing. This is the greatest danger. You have a huge coronal mass ejection, a solar storm, and the first part of it gets here in 8 minutes. That's the radiation. And there's no way to see it coming. This is one of the reasons why right now NASA, JAXA, ESA, in the last couple of years, they absolutely pulled out all the stoppers. They put up, we've got approximately 8 solar observatories in space. Now, before that, there was just that old SOHO that NASA and the Dutch had put up, and it's still up. They've extended the project. I mean, this spacecraft is like an old Timex, takes a lick and keeps on ticking.
So what are they looking for? 9 minutes of warning, or what
sniffles.
Is there?
They're looking for the sniffles. Remember, you got a scratchy throat, you get the sniffles, you get the sneeze. Next thing you know, you have the pneumonia. They're looking for sniffles. All right, they're looking for harbinger signs in solar activity, because the thing about this entire fleet of solar observatories is that they're looking at the sun in every way imaginable. It is completely amazing, including where they can do it holographically.
Well,
and they are looking at the sun in every way, studying it in every conceivable way, because if they can see an event building, then what they can do is hopefully have enough lead time to say, shut down the power grids before a solar flare takes them out. We are really susceptible to EMP. You know, it's one of the things you're starting to see on the talk shows, and they're talking about this as a weapon of mass destruction. If terrorists were to come out with these EMP weapons, which are very crude, not all that difficult to build. You know, unfortunately, popular science or popular mechanics, one of the two, actually showed people how to do it. You know, God, whoever brilliant idea that was, I don't know. But EMP comes out, it fuses all of our circuits. That's it. We are back to tube radio, okay? AM tube radio.
If you can find them, and if they're available, and if they're working, you know, they're you just don't walk into a store and say, I would like to buy a tube radio, please, because they're going to look at you and say, what? I haven't seen one of those in 20 years.
That's right. Uh-huh. But that's what we could do. We are very, very vulnerable. But if, you know, if they say, hey, folks, that's it. We're going to shut down the grids. Everybody go out and pull the battery cables. Go to your, go to your car, you know, take that positive cable and yank it off the terminal. All right. Yeah. Break the circuits, pull out the batteries on everything, and then wrap it up in tinfoil, put it in cans. I mean, we have a lot of, in our book, we have a lot of suggestions on how you can get yourself, get your electronics as survivable as possible without going to the expense of building these incredibly hardened Faraday cages that the military uses.
Right.
There are little things that you can do. And if we have enough heads up, then we can really prevent one of these massive blackout events. People can be moved underground. You can wait for the solar storm to pass. This is like forecasting hurricanes. You know, they at one point they say, that's it. The eye is turned in our direction. Hook them inland. That's it. Everyone boards up everything, grabs the water, the kids, and the gas, and they go. And we're saving more lives than ever before. And that's the same thing we'll have to do, except it'll be with solar storms. And with solar storms, you don't move inland. With solar storms, you need to put dirt and concrete over you. You need to be, because the threat comes straight down. All right.
It's almost like reenacting the old duck and cover warnings. Do you remember those? As a kid, the duck and cover warnings?
The duck and cover is not even going to, you know, duck and cover in terms of a massive white class solar event. And we're in the, you know, the thing of it is are you in the crosshairs of that event? If that event, it goes off and it goes off into space, you know, at an oblique angle to the Earth, then where, you know, great. There for the grace of God go we. On the other hand, if that thing goes off and we are dead in the crosshairs, you know, that's it.
Right.
Boom.
Yep.
We get mega slammed. And you are talking about an awful lot of radiation hitting us. It can cause a huge amount of suffering. In fact, in our book, we actually have all the different causes of death. This is the one to us is the number one greatest concern. And so it's something where when I'm saying to people, you should start getting ready today and being aware of the world around you, it's using your cell phone to find radiation safe areas. We tell you how to do that. It's, you know, you're walking, you got to live life. You got to go to work. You got to go to school. You got to go shopping. You're going to go to the mall. But what you need to start doing is being aware of where are your best radiation sheltered areas, if there's a solar storm alert, maybe they can, you know, 30 minutes before that thing pops, they know and they just alert the whole planet, everyone that's sunward side, you know.
And just hold the bus there, Marshall. We do have a solar storm alert in the studio. Hansen's going to throw me his wiener schnitzel.
Phone lines are open.
347.
Are we happy now?
3287.
space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, they began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
You are in the Night Zone on LawTalkRadio.com. Your host, Colin Knight.
Yes, and then old market radio, 1 second of silence was a 2-day suspension. 2 seconds of silence, and more than 2 seconds, you never went to air again. But I'm glad they don't follow that rule on the internet radio, because we had more than a few seconds of silence there, panic stations around the net, and we don't know what happened, but we are back, and I believe Marshall is with me. Are you there, Marshall?
I'm here.
Isn't that bizarre? Maybe we're touching some areas that maybe we shouldn't be talking about, but you kind of dabbled into something that I wanted to query on this last 10 minutes or so. Is the if Nibiru, Planet X, first of all, could it be inhabited? Traveling in the orbit that it is, what would that planet, that mass, be exerted to? I mean, the elliptical orbit that they talk about, 6 billion miles away from Pluto, there can't be much warmth out there.
Well, what we believe is that the planet is in orbit around a brown dwarf, and there are, this is interesting, there, of course, you're reading the Sumerian accounts and a lot of other folklore. It will tell you that, well, this is about the Anunnaki and they're coming back.
Right.
You know, it's a really bizarre form of your girlfriend, your boyfriend's back. But
yeah.
The interesting thing is that we're working with psychics and channelers and also working with remote viewers. And what we're being told is, yes, that some are talking about one, others are saying two of the planets in this mini system. And it's a mini constellation. It's a brown dwarf with several objects. And two of them are planets capable of supporting life. And if there's enough heat energy, either coming from the core of those planets and or there's heat energy coming from the brown dwarf, then life can be sustained. And, you know, it's not obviously going to be in the exact same way that the Earth is. So it's really hard for us to imagine. But, yes, I mean, there's no reason why it couldn't be inhabited.
So
we
so
haven't gone to that in our research. Huh?
Yeah. So basically Planet X is packing its own power source. You know, it's self-powered.
Right.
It's not so much taking power from elliptical orbit as it is self-powered unto itself by this dwarf star.
Yeah. I mean, there are some folks that believe we should reclassify Jupiter as some kind of a sun because it puts off more radiation than it receives.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are those that believe that, yeah, it should be reclassified again as some kind of a sun. So this is one of those things we're going to see. And, of course, Nibiru being the planet of crossing, again, there's also the issue of that this object comes in and it's the planet actually that comes closer into the system, whereas the brown dwarf that is its sun for this planet is further out. So there's any number of things. You know, that's the reason why when we did our report, our February report, that we get into the flyby scenarios, we said, well, let's look at it in terms of it being an incredibly massive asteroid or a comet or some kind of mini constellation.
Right.
Where you have a brown dwarf with planetary objects, moons and planets, and looking at those various different, you know, options. So at this stage, what we're really saying, that we feel comfortable in saying, is that there's clearly a perturber out there. It's massive,
right,
and it is inbound. And,
right,
you know, we are certainly going to know about this thing
in some time, I believe, in the next year. And we're going to know about it either because people are going to be in the Southern Hemisphere going out and reporting it, guys going out and buying a little 4-inch Meade telescope.
Right.
They're going to be seeing it. Yeah, when it gets to the point where
a guy with a home-built 8-inch can
see it, that, you know, someone's got to go out and they have to announce it. And it has to come out that way.
Or could it be the biblical North Star?
Well, no, because we believe that this is coming in from the south. So that
but in theory, right now,
it's only observable from Antarctica.
Right. But you see, my point is that this would be on the same level as the legend of the North Star. This would be, in future, the legend of the South Star. You see my point? Is where mankind has come.
Yeah, except this is going to be, when this thing is in full bloom, so to speak,
right.
It's going to look like a second sun.
Right.
And this thing it's going to be big in the sky, and certainly by 2012, at that point, everyone on the planet is going to be able to step out in their yard, point up at the sky, and collectively poop their pants.
Right.
You know, there it is. Gee, what do we do now? You know, and that's where you don't want to be, standing out in your yard, pooping your pants, going, my golly, what am I going to do now? That's
right.
What we're trying to convey to people, is what you're going to do then is what you're doing now. All right,
so
and that is becoming self-informed of war. You know, and you're preparing. You get through it. The ancients have done it. Colin, that's the message. The ancients did it, okay?
Yeah,
and they looked in the sky for this thing. They were aware. You know, the Hopi have a ceremony, and the Hopi ceremony, what they're looking for is they wanted, they're waiting for certain celestial events. They're not waiting for mystery gods to come dancing or whatever. They're watching Venus tracking through the sky. All right? And we're going to have, coming in 2012, during the period of the summer solstice, all right, Venus is going to, during the period of the summer solstice, within a few weeks of that, it's going to go retrograde. And that is a once-in-a-century event. That's the kind of celestial event the Hopi are looking for when they build their lodges, these special ceremonial lodges. And they're looking during the summer solstice, and if it doesn't happen, they go, great, you know, let's smoke the good stuff and celebrate. But if it does happen, that's it. Prepare the people for bad times. And if you listen to the Hopi, you listen to other ancients, indigenous cultures today, they're trying to get the word out, you know, and everyone's going, yeah, get away, you bother me, all right?
Right.
So the thing here is what we really try and emphasize to folks is that, look, there's no harm in being prepared. You know, it's if you're ready for this, you're aware for it, the most important part is that you're mentally ready for it.
Right.
You know, to just go out and, in, you know, for example, a gun for home defense. Any gunny will tell you the most dangerous person in the world that goes out, buys a revolver, a box of cartridges, puts it away on a shelf in the closet and says it's there when I need it. They're the ones that are going to wind up killing themselves or getting someone else killed.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
It's the ones that take that revolver down, clean it, and then once a month or maybe once every other month, they go to the range and they stay proficient.
Mm-hmm.
And they shoot and they get familiar with it so that they don't have to think twice about it. It comes natural in the time when they need to do it. Well, that's the same thing here. People need to have thought this through because
I think also people have to they have to have a belief in something. If Planet X is it's going to do what it's going to do, we're all going to die. you know, then what's the point of paying your mortgage? Why go to work tomorrow? You know, who cares whether you're married or otherwise? Society in general would fall apart, wouldn't it? So we all have to have hope. And I'm a firm believer of the positive side of everything, that we've survived this before. We can do it again.
Well, this is, to me, I mean, I don't view this, I will say, I mean, I've gone through stages on this, and, you know, I call it the five stages of catastrophism. And we explain it in the book, but it, very simply, it is, the five stages are, I don't have time for this crap, oh crap, share the crap, crap happens, and then finally the fifth stage, the universe is unfolding as it should. All right.
Yeah.
Now, I have gone through all five steps. I can tell you this is not something you can compress into a matter of a few days or even a few months. All right.
I agree. Yeah.
This is a process you need to go through. You know, like they say with grieving, it takes you 6 months to get over grieving when you lose somebody. This is an event is just going to be as much impact as losing a spouse or a loved one or a child. All right. You're not going to compress that down with this cavalier, "Oh, cross that bridge when I come to it," you know, because when that happens, you'll get to the bridge, but there'll be a line about 10 miles ahead of you, and, you know, the bridge will be on fire. Okay.
Marshall, unfortunately, we've hit that bridge. We've blown out an hour. I can't believe it, sir. It's been an absolute pleasure. Yowza, YOWUSA.com. YOWUSA.com, correct?
Yes.
Marshall,
and come on, we've got videos, we've got a lot of information, and then just read it and then find what resonates within you. That's the most important thing.
There you go.
If it doesn't connect for you, then it doesn't connect. But if it does, and you want to get through it, then we're the go-to people.
I appreciate it very, very much, Marshall. Blessings on your household, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marshall Masters, Planet X, Planet X Forecast, some great YouTube information out there that he has. It's absolutely brilliant. We got to get out of here. It's that time of the night already. Can't believe it.
Tonight's featured song is from Tiddler and the Teacups. Tiddler and the Teacups.com.
Driving down the road, minding my own business. I see a UFO land right into a tree. Scared the pants off of me. There was so much debris, and the next thing I see is a little green man in front of me. He says, Crembop-a-doodle-dee-jay. I say, Bop-a-doodle-dee-jay. He says, Crembop-a-doodle-dee-jay. Bop-a-doodle-dee-jay. Bop-a-doodle-dee-jay. We move a limo for about an hour. When out of the clouds pops another UFO. I believe you know he had to go, but I hear him say as he flew away, Grandpa, the doodly jump. I don't keep up a doodly jump. Grandpa, the doodly jump. Grandpa, the doodly jump. Grandpa, the doodly jump. Grandpa, the doodly jump.